How's your car looking? Showing its age? Faded paint? Dents? Dings? Don't worry. Maaco is here to help. They're the experts in affordable paint jobs and light collision repairs, helping you keep your car looking its best without breaking the bank. With Maaco's national reach and community focus, you're not just getting top-notch service. You're actually getting a partner you can trust. Visit your local Maaco today and see how they can refresh your ride. Go in, get the free estimate, and the expert technicians will handle the rest. Uh-oh, better get Maaco.
Now more than ever, Lowe's knows you don't just want a low price, you want the lowest price. And with our lowest price guarantee, you can count on us for competitive prices on all your home improvement projects. If you find a qualifying lower price somewhere else on the same item, we'll match it. Lowe's, we help, you save. Price match applies to same item, current price at qualifying retailers. Exclusions and terms apply. Learn how we'll match price at Lowe's.com/lowest price guarantee. Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Hurry, these July 4th deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location while supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
Visit your nearby Lowe's on South High Street in Columbus.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
Today on The Grave Talks, near-death experience. Could a near-death experience open the door to the supernatural? For one woman, Laura Ketchledge, that seems to be the case. After having two brushes with death, it seems that a portal to the other side is opened for her. This portal would bring with it encounters with deceased loved ones, friends, pets, and the occasional stranger. Did these continuous encounters with the dead have a purpose or meaning? Is there a message they're trying to get across to Laura from the other side? Today, we hear the true story of a near-death experience that brought the other side closer to our reality.
I was just a normal kid. You know, I like to watch Dark Shadows and see a good ghost story, but the paranormal was the last thing on my mind. The first thing that really happened to me, I have to say, is when I was 12 years old, it was 5 days before my 13th birthday, I went out to a stable and got on a horse unsupervised. I mean, the horse took off with me and went to the highway, and he was going so fast, it was like ice. The horse flipped up on top of me and crushed me, and I was nearly killed. But just before the horse was to crush my leg, I left my body, and I watched the event like a spectator. And you know, it's so vivid. I mean, I'm 60 years old, and I was 12 years old at the time, but I can tell you everything down to the color of the socks I was wearing that day. I just shot out of my body. I saw myself on the horse. I saw the dried pine needles on the trees. This was in Florida. This was like 95-degree weather. It was a hot day. And I could even see the little curls in my hair, you know, and the green print tank top that I was wearing. So I was just sucked right out of my body. I saw the horse as it was just about to fall. Then I was pulled back. At the very last moment, I put my arms out so that my face wouldn't hit the highway, the pavement. And It was a grotesque accident. I don't really think I need to elaborate. But that was my first experience. It was pretty traumatic because I was seriously injured.
When you were going through that experience and you were sucked out of your body, I mean, this sounds, I mean, obviously, it sounds like it in your mind, it probably it took a long time to go through, but it probably happened almost in a split second, the way that you're recalling the details.
Yes.
But once you had snapped out of this, once this event had occurred and you were back conscious and you were able to recall that this experience happened and the way that you experienced it, what was going through your mind? How were you processing this view of the accident, realizing you weren't just seeing it through your eyes, you were seeing it from another perspective other than your own?
Well, I was a little girl back then and kind of sheltered, and this was way before the internet or talk. I've never heard of out of body. I never, things like that. But it was in the hospital, and I was really hurt.
Sure.
I mean, my leg was crushed, and I had lost the skin down to my bone, and it was a life-threatening accident. I was just so lucky that, you know, a car didn't run me over after the horse got up. I tried to tell my mother a little bit, and she was just so shaken up that I was nearly killed and how badly I was injured. So I tried to, you know, I think I told my grandmother and my sister, and they would just give me hugs, and I was a little girl. But you know what? My grandmother totally believed me. She didn't question at all. And later on, over 10 years later, I found out why.
What was that reason?
My grandmother's mother, Kate Marston, they're from Canada, and she was a lovely woman. From all accounts, she had what my grandmother said later on in life was the gift. Mm-hmm. My grandmother tried to explain to me how when people that were ailing, people that were ill would come to my grandmother, great-grandmother actually, and she would lay there her hands on them, and sometimes she would heal them or comfort them. And one time there was a child that was stung by bees in the summer up by Barry's Bay in Canada. And she put her hands and somehow stopped the anaphylactic shock or whatever. But she was very weakened by it. And I heard the story, and I wish my grandmother had told me years ago. But my uncle had some sort of abilities, and later in life I talked to him about it. But I was a little girl at the time, you know, I was just turning 13, and I couldn't verbalize it, even though it changed my perspective. And another thing I'd like to share with you is it felt completely natural, not foreign. The whole event felt natural, and I think that surprised me the most.
Hey, back to that conversation in just a moment. Cold turkey may be great on sandwiches, but there's a better way to break your bad habits. We're not talking about some weird mind voodoo that your crazy neighbor may be up to, or maybe not, depending on the way you look at him at midnight when you gaze across. Okay, maybe that's a bit much. Anyway, we're talking about our sponsor, Fume, and they look at the problem in a different way. Not everything in a bad habit is wrong. So instead of drastic, uncomfortable change, why not just remove the bad from your habit? Fume is an innovative, award-nominated device that does just that. Instead of electronics, Fume is completely natural. Instead of vapor, Fume uses flavored air. And instead of harmful chemicals, Fume uses all natural, delicious flavors. You get it. Instead of bad, Fume is good. It's a habit you're free to enjoy, and it makes replacing your bad habit easy. Your Fume comes with an adjustable airflow dial and is designed with movable parts and magnets for fidgeting, giving your fingers a lot to do, which is helpful for distressing and anxiety while breaking your habit. I'll tell you what, I didn't know what to expect, but having something to fidget with and use that's not harmful, that was a win-win for me. Stopping is something we all put off because it's hard, but switching to Fume is easy, enjoyable, and even fun. Fume has over 100,000 customers and has thousands of success stories, and there's no reason that can't be you. Join Fume in accelerating humanity's breakup from destructive habits by picking up the Journey Pack today. Head to tryfume.com and use code GRAVETALKS and save 10% when you get the Journey Pack today. That's tryfume.com and use code GRAVETALKS to save an additional 10% off your order today. That's tryfume.com and use code GRAVETALKS to save an additional 10% off your order today. Now back to the conversation. So you're going through this and you're having these realizations that this did happen. This wasn't like a dream or anything. I mean, sometimes our minds, I know, they'll wander to try and make sense, make reason of experiences that we otherwise don't understand. But it sounds like you really, very early on, came to an acceptance that this was just kind of a natural part of the experience that maybe we just don't understand all that much. Is that accurate?
You know, I think so. I wouldn't have been able to process it or verbally tell you that at being such a young age, but I came to an understanding that there was more as a little girl.
Sure. That makes sense. Prior to this experience and this near-death experience, had you ever had any sort of interactions or experiences, or what was your belief system prior to this experience of the paranormal? And not that we're classifying this near-death experience as paranormal, but I know we're going to get into that. But just tell me, for reference point, what was your understanding of ghosts and things of that nature at that point up into your life?
Well, let me preface a little bit. I come from an educated middle-class family, not rich, but everybody went to college and had good jobs. And my grandfather was a Presbyterian minister who had gone to Princeton and been a theologian. So I was kind of, you know, really indoctrinated into the Presbyterian church and sang in the church choir. Although after my experience at 13, I felt a little bit of detached from the dogma. You know, I felt a little more questioning.
Mm-hmm. So questioning, but having, did you have, or had you had any experiences up until that point other than the near-death experience or any sort of interactions or brushes with what would one would consider paranormal or supernatural?
Before my leg was crushed as a child, nothing.
Nothing.
Zip,
okay.
Nada. Then between 13 and 19, absolutely nothing. And then I had, gosh, you're going to think me a big klutz. I had my second accident with a horse. Wasn't the same horse. But I was killed in that accident and had a near-death experience and was resuscitated before I was rushed to the hospital.
Wow.
I love horses. I mean, I've ridden for years.
Sure.
But I've gotten clobbered a few times.
And that seems to come along with the territory quite often with individuals who are very into horses. I understand. Yeah, I mean, I'm personally not a big horse person myself, but I've had friends over the years who have been very into it. So I'm familiar with the passion and everything and the dangers, too, that do come along with that. So to jump into that second experience you had, if you will, where you said you were killed. What happened there?
Yes. You know, at the time, you know, I was 19 years old. I can say this now because I'm 60. But I was a pretty girl, and I, you know, was seeking out some part-time modeling, and I was working at a nightclub and running with a very, very fast crowd in Washington, D.C. I had, I'd really had a great time. And I had my own apartment, and one day my girlfriend called me, and she suggested to go horseback riding in Centerville, Virginia. So I showed up and she didn't, and lucky me, I did bring my riding helmet because I'd taken lessons riding for years. So it was such a beautiful day, and the horse that was saddled for me was kind of like an ugly horse. So I asked the stable owner, I said, "Can I have that pretty horse over there?" And I was told, "Well, the horse is a handful." And I said, "Well, you know, having a big ego and being a teenager, oh, I can handle it." Well, I couldn't. So I was riding the horse and met up with some other people on the trail, and it was such a gorgeous April day. We decided to race back to the barn. Well, my horse took off and went into a hand gallop, not a canter, and stumbled. And I went flying. Pardon me. I went flying off this horse, but I never hit the ground. I left my body, and it was such a shock. I was on the horse. I was tilting to the right. I knew I was going down. I knew it was bad, and I think I swore. And then I was zooming through this black velvet tunnel out of my body. I never hit the ground. I never experienced the pain of shattering my nose or breaking my hand. I was gone. And it was like being like a big wave just swept me out. And it happened so fast. And it was shocking to me. And I had a pretty lengthy near-death experience. Looked at some of the actions, you know, just some of the dumb things you do when you're a kid and you regret it.
Mm-hmm. So,
would you like to know what happened next?
Yeah, I do want to know what happened next. Yes, go ahead.
Sure. So, my grandfather, my late grandfather, who I absolutely adored, who died when I was 12 years old, was my guide. And I was able to make it to what I call source, or the collection of all my past life personalities, and it was intoxicating and beautiful. But at that point, I had lost my physical body, and I was a point of consciousness, if that really makes sense. I wasn't aware of arms or legs or things like that, and going to source was the most intoxicating, beautiful, happy, blissful. There aren't enough good words in the English language to express it. But it was over quick, and I was back with my grandfather, and I had so many epiphanies. So much was taught to me. I know that I was showed actions and things that I'd done in my life that were stupid and how they affected people, and I was shown a lot of epiphanies. And as I was talking to my grandfather, and he was telling me, you know, that I was going to return, I began fighting it. And these great epiphanies, you know, it felt like they were slipping through my fingers. And I was conscious of having a non-physical body, but I was me. I looked like me. I had a perfect copy of me. And as I was going back, I was extremely distressed. I felt cheated. And I felt very angry and at the process, and I was desperate to stay with my grandfather. And when I returned to my physical body, it was like this big thud, like a cork, you know, out of a champagne being, you know, you play it backwards and the cork's going back in the champagne, that type of feeling. It wasn't particularly pleasant. And I was so detached from the two gentlemen that had gotten off their horses, that had saved my life, that had called, you know, for, you know, had called the hospital and things like that. I was so detached from them. I just looked around this field and I knew. And then I said out loud, this is not reality. And as I was going back, you know, they put me in a car and raced me to the hospital. I was unconscious again, but I didn't go out of body or have any connection or anything. And by the time I got to the hospital and I, you know, was clutching at the doctor and I was trying to tell him about what had happened to me, he looked at me and he said, what kind of drugs did you take today? And he shamed me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my mother was there and it was just like bedlam. And he shamed me. And then he canceled admitting me to the hospital, and he says, you know, I don't have any sympathy for drug users. And my mother had worked at the hospital, and she was trying to talk to him, and it was a big mess. And it took me about 12 hours to readjust that I was back to physical reality. And after that, nothing was ever the same.
Wow. So this experience obviously went much deeper than just the first out of body and near death experience that you had. As you came to and started living your life again and getting back to yourself or a, you know, a more functioning version of yourself after the accident of that nature. How are you processing all of this? And you say things weren't ever the same. What changed? What was different?
Well, I was never the same. I came back, I guess I came back with some odd abilities or gifts, but, you know, they didn't make sense to me. They'd play out later in life. But my whole perception, there was not a religious epiphany when I died. It wasn't like in the Bible at all, not a straight shot up to hell or heaven. There are rings or dimensions or layers around physical reality that were shocking. The whole thing was a shock. It was nothing that I was raised to believe. So, you know, I was a kid. There just wasn't anybody to talk to. So I took myself to a therapist to share what had happened because I wanted to process it. I knew I never did drugs or alcohol. I just wasn't that kind of a kid. I'd never waste my money on drugs when I could buy a pretty dress. So I was a very level-headed kid that could, you know, paid her bills, went to work, didn't get into too much mischief. So I went to a therapist, and I remember talking to her, and I said, gosh, Marjorie, you know, I really want to share what happened. And she looked at me, and she leaned over. She said, are we having a pity party that you broke your hand and smashed your nose and got so banged up? And it's like, you know, I felt doubly shamed. She says, you know, you could dream when you're unconscious, you know, and you had, you're such a dramatic young woman to begin with. And I really wasn't a dramatic. It was her problems projecting on me, and I could feel that. Mm-hmm. So I left, and I just didn't talk about it except to my late grandmother and my mother and my sister. And I didn't talk about it except to those three people for 30 years. So I kept it in.
Yeah. You knew to yourself the reality of what you had gone through and what the experience was. Tell me about some of the first subsequent experiences that really solidified to you that something had changed, that there was another sense there, some sort of skill set, if you will, that had not existed, or maybe you just had not tapped into prior to those near-death experiences. What were some of the first experiences you had there?
I don't think I ever had the aptitude like people have the sixth sense that they're born with. Mm-hmm. That sure wasn't me. You know, when I died at 19 and came back, I came back with a slight ability to perceive into the next dimension. That's what I really call it, because I don't think I'm all that gifted, or, you know, I'm just a very average person. So the first time, you're going to laugh because I wasn't too brave. A spirit or a ghost or whatever you call it, I call it a soul. Mm-hmm. Came into a room I was in, and thankfully I was dressed because I ran out of the room screaming like a mental patient, like Julie Andrews on top of the mountain. You know, I didn't take it well. And what happened was I was sitting up in bed, and this ball or soul just drifted into the room and was hovering up by a door. And I could see it clearly. It was this beautiful mauve color. It was dense but slightly translucent. And it was emanating. You could just tell, like, when somebody walks in a room and your back's to them, you know, you can feel somebody walk in a room. Well, I felt this soul come in, and I was so shocked. I mean, I was by the beach, and I was having a good time on vacation. So I ran out. But the next day, I was smart enough to call my older sister, and I said, okay, who in the family died? And she said, Aunt Evelyn passed away yesterday afternoon. And Evelyn was such a sweet woman. She was my grandfather's sister, and she had been nothing but delightful to me as a child. So I felt ashamed, and I felt guilty, but I knew she was reaching out to me, and I felt comforted. So I wasn't scared when that happened. I had another friend that was killed in an accident, and the same thing happened. And then it, when I let go some of that fear, the experiences just were like a domino effect. They kept happening.
When you had those first experiences, and after the fact, you were able to identify through other sources who, in fact, had passed away and appeared to be visiting you at that moment in time. While you were having that experience of that visit, were you able to get any sort of inkling as to who that was or a feeling? Sometimes my reference point would be when you're in a room with someone and you can see them, obviously, and they're not dead. Some people just kind of have a feel to them. Sometimes there's a sense, sometimes there's a smell, sometimes there's just an aura about some people. You could shut your eyes and sometimes guess who is in the room with you. Did you have any of that identification feeling going on when you were having those visits with an otherwise unidentifiable energy?
Well, the first two visits, I got up and I ran.
Okay.
After that, I was not panicked. I was very receptive. And yes, I did. I could see images and did find out who it was. Can I share with you what a delightful experience?
Yeah.
I had this beautiful cat named Puff that I got from my second grade boyfriend, Richard Black. And I love this cat. And she passed away at the old age of 19, which is pretty good for a cat.
Yes.
So she passed away. One afternoon, my parents had to put her to sleep, and I was very sad. I'd gotten the phone call, but my husband and I went out to a big event. And later that night, you know, I couldn't sleep. I was kind of grieving the kitty. And all of a sudden, I looked up, and there was this white, luminous ball or soul. So this time I didn't run. I got up on my, I took out my, you know, the little chair that I had for my vanity and stood on top of it to get closer to the ball. And in my mind, or I could see at the same time, was a little gray kitten. It was Puff. And she was so much younger. And she meowed, just went meow like that. Mm-hmm. I was so delighted to be so close to her. And this experience, it lasted a good 5 minutes. So it didn't fade away or anything like that. And I just was gazing at this beautiful, crystally sparkled core of the ball or the orb or whatever you'd like to call it. I just call it a soul. And it was so wonderful to see her face. But her face was not in the orb. I had gotten, I guess, telepathy. Mm-hmm. Auditory and visual telepathy. That's the only way I can process it, you know, neurologically. And I stood up there for 5 minutes. Luckily, my husband was asleep. And the experience was just absolutely delightful and beautiful. And I was crying. There was tears running down my face. And, you know, I couldn't wait to call my sister the next day to tell her the good news because she cherished this little kitty as much as I did. And we'd grown up with her. So that was just a beautiful continuation of existence. And I was so comforted that my cat continued, not just people.
Sure. Did you start attributing these experiences to the near-death experience as almost the catalyst or the trigger that opened a door to these things happening?
Well, I have to say, I never would have had these experiences without the accident at 19. So breaking my nose and shattering my finger were worth it. It just, you know, hurt mm-hmm. a lot. It opened the door and nothing was ever the same. My perception of non-physical reality was pretty cemented and I changed as a person. And after my NDE, I lost a lot of interest in material things like having a big house or a car or real jewelry, or just stuff mm-hmm. that, you know, you're kind of interested in as a teenager. That all disintegrated for me.
Why do you think that is? From someone who's experienced this firsthand, why is it, in your opinion, that when someone has an NDE, a near-death experience, that door opens and doesn't close again after recovery? Why does that door stay open? What is it about that allows it to happen? Because obviously this is a common occurrence for folks who do experience a near-death experience.
That's an excellent question. My estimation is, and this is my own personal hypothesis. I wasn't, I didn't get the Ten Commandments or the instruction book or NDEs after I died.
Sure.
I struggled with it. I think, first of all, I may have a genetic predisposition through my great grandmother, Kate Marston George, and because one of her grandchildren had it. I may have a slight predisposition, but the near-death experience coming back, it was such a ferocious fight. I didn't want to come back, that maybe something is loosened or a perception that is given to you. I don't know, but I consider that the most valuable gift, having the perception of non-physical reality when I return. I was pretty darn grateful for it, and the nice and the beautiful thing is my grandfather still loved me. He'd been dead quite a few years, but the love doesn't die, and that was a really great comfort. And I was able to share that with his widow, my grandmother, and talk to her about seeing her husband, and that gave her a tremendous comfort.
Sure.
He came to me again when I was 25, but he was passing on a message to her with that visitation, which I found moving. I found it very moving.
Do you find that individuals who've had near-death experiences, that this door is always open to them after the fact, or does it take a certain individual who maybe has some sort of genetic preset with them to be open to these things?
That's something I hadn't really explored. I didn't talk about this for 30 years, so I had no one to share. Now, I did read a little bit of Edgar Cayce, to try to learn something, but I basically went to a therapist when I was 25 and after I'd had a few of these experiences, and she was very insightful. And she said, you're a very level-headed young woman. I think you need to read a few of Robert Monroe's books from the Monroe Institute to give you some clarity. And I did, and it explained a little bit things that I had seen and been shown. But I didn't read any other books on the paranormal or consult anyone else because I thought that it was fraught with, back then I thought it was, 99% fraught with wishful thinkers or desperate people or, I didn't have the highest opinion of the paranormal researchers. But that was my own ignorance. And plus, back in those times, there wasn't the internet and there wasn't a sharing or things like that. Mm-hmm. A near-death experience, I believe, awakens something in the human being that's had it. I'm a curious person by nature, and I'm not a person that could be indoctrinated into any cult or any political movement. I'm definitely a free thinker, linear thinker, but still a pretty open-minded free thinker. I hope that answers the question.
Sure. Let's move on to the early 2000s. You're in rural Kentucky in a farmhouse, and things begin to happen. Let's start there, and I'll let you pick it up and kind of go through the chronological events that led to you realizing something needs to be looked into at the property you were at.
May I preface something, please?
Sure.
After my NDE, I moved around a lot. I went through a divorce. I lived in Florida. I moved around a lot. Every place I lived, there were, I guess you'd call paranormal events. Seeing people that had passed away, things like that. I moved to a beautiful little place in outside of Lexington, Kentucky, and I built a farm. It had been a hay field before. Across the street was a slave cemetery, because this was still the old South, Kentucky was. And then a little further up the street were the remnants or the lot of an old schoolhouse that had been a makeshift battlefield during the Civil War, especially used after the Battle of Perryville, where there was an exodus of Union soldiers and captured Confederate soldiers. They had walked from Perryville back to Louisville. So this street had a little bit of history. So I put up a house and, you know, moved my horse. And, of course, I got a horse in my 20s and had a horse farm. I as much as I loved them, and they did get clobbered eventually, you know, occasionally, I had my own horse who was my darling. But then as soon as I moved in, paranormal events started taking place. Orbs, I could hear whispering on one of the porches, and I even got my camera out and was able to photograph a few of the orbs. Sometimes I'd run for my camera and it didn't work out. I didn't make it in time. So at the same time, you know, I'm a writer. I live at the house and, you know, work in my home. So these were not all things that happened at night. These were daytime occurrences too. So I realized that the window I had opened as a teenager certainly wasn't closing as a middle-aged adult. Would you like to hear about the phone?
Yeah, I'd love to hear about the phone.
Okay. When you live in rural Kentucky, power outages and are just a given. We have big storms out here and everything is, none of the utilities are underground. So I bought I had an old-fashioned telephone that worked when, you know, you had the power outages.
That wraps up part one of our interview with Laura Ketchledge about near-death experiences. In part two, what happened with an old battery-powered phone when it was disconnected and contained no batteries? What was Laura's goal when she invited paranormal investigators into her home to try and see what was going on? What did the paranormal investigators find when they were brought into the home as well? Also, was there ever any fear that Laura would uncover anything negative when investigating the paranormal, and what did she find? How did Laura's grandfather save her life from beyond the grave when she was just 34? Who was a strange ghost man that Laura met in the middle of the night at her farmhouse? And what has Laura learned about communicating with spirits as she was unaware of early on in her experiences? Those questions and more in part two of our interview. Until next time for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.
Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Hurry! These July 4th deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location while supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
Visit your nearby Lowe's on South High Street in Columbus.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed, or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART, or go to lifelock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Hurry! These July 4th deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location while supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
Visit your nearby Lowe's on South High Street in Columbus.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply. You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.